I'm gonna cut it short.
All right, we'll call the meeting to order.
Been so long since I've seen my agenda. Here it is.
Our next public hearing is conditional use number 1772 LT Associates LLC.
This is an application to consider the conditional use of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district for multifamily dwelling structures proposing 472 units to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, and containing 186.56 acres more or less, lying south of Road 267, also known as Gills Neck Road, approximately 1,000 feet southeast of Road 268, also known as King's Highway. For the benefit of the record, I do have an exhibit booklet. It is a part of the record and has been a part of the record since December 28th of 07, and it includes similar documentation as was submitted in the previous public hearing. I also have the same comments, just for the record. We did receive those comments addressed under change of zone number 1630 from County Engineering, Department of Agriculture, and other individuals also referenced in the public hearing for change of zone 1630. I also, just to clarify for the record, Mr. Anthony, who spoke previously at the public hearing for change of zone 1630, did provide his comments in writing to both those cases. His comments are now part of the record for conditional use 1772. And gentlemen, that's all I have unless you have questions.
All right, sir. We thank you. And the chair recognizes Mr. Schrader.
Thank you, sir. For the benefit of the record, my name is Dennis Schrader. I'm attorney of record for the applicants, LT Associates, for this particular project. This being the governor's subdivision, I have with me the same entourage that I had a few minutes ago, I should say a few hours ago. I have Tom Ford from Land Design. I have Steve McCabe from George Miles and Buer. I have the traffic consultant, Derek Kennedy from Orth Rogers and Tucker Mooreshead on hydrology issues. For the benefit of the record, and I assume without any objection, I would propose that the testimony that was given by Mr. Mooreshead earlier this evening be incorporated by reference into this part of the proceedings without the necessity of putting him on again and having that repeated.
No objection to that? Is that all right, counsel?
I was giving Mr. Lang something for the record.
The applicant is asked to incorporate the testimony of Mr. Mooreshead in the previous hearing into this hearing without having to put him back on.
That's certainly fine and consistent with the way it's operated in similar situations.
And I will also have available, again, all of these people to answer any questions that are site-specific to this particular project. As Mr. Lang has noted, this project is located on Gills Neck Road, between a project known as the Senators and another project known as the Towns and Village Center. The owner of the tract of land is J.G. Townsend Jr. and LT Associates as the applicant as the developer. The proposed site includes 185.56 acres of land and is currently zoned AR1 agricultural residential district. The purpose of this application as a conditional use is twofold. One is to allow for multifamily townhouses in a condominium regime to be placed upon the site, and secondly, pursuant to the new ordinance number 1920, to allow for a bump up in the density of the unit based upon the buy-in that is provided for in that ordinance. To the best of my knowledge, this may be the first time this application under 1920 has been presented to you. This proposal, if accepted and authorized by you, would result in 472 units being placed on 185.56 acres. The property is, as you no doubt are keenly aware of from this evening's proceeding, is in an environmentally sensitive development zone and in a level 3 growing area impacted by environmentally sensitive features. We have submitted a book that contains a great many of exhibits that Mr. Ford will soon describe for you and recite their meaning as they relate to this particular project. There are streets that will be private within this particular project. These private streets will be built to the applicable standards, will include sidewalks and street lighting. The Sussex County West Rehoboth expansion of the Dewey Beach Sanitary Sewer District will provide for wastewater treatment. Tidewater Utilities, Inc. will be supplying the water supply. With those thoughts in mind and recognizing the lateness of the hour, I will ask Mr. Ford to come forward and describe in the briefest possible details this particular project.
Thank you, sir. Tom Ford, Land Design. And briefly, not to go over what we discussed on Townsend Village Center, on the history and the site location and the farming operations and so forth, and the coastal Sussex growth, I would like that testimony of Townsend Village Center introduction to be incorporated in this particular application. So bypassing that, I will jump to the composite view of the land. I do want to point out again that it is a 540-acre site that we are parceling out pieces of. The governor's portion of this has a very amorphic line. It incorporates all the land you see in the gray tailings that surround the site. It's because it's all one tax parcel. These are all the remaining lands that are not in any other application that's been heard. And Hawkeye has already been approved and recorded. Senators, what occurred in this area was not to relinquish what the state deems as sensitive land and what the applicant cherishes as also sacred lands, that those lands would be put into conservation. They are utilized in our total calculation for density, which is allowed under 1920. And this basically is a footprint for the governor's subdivision, should this be approved. The plan itself, and this is basically what you're seeing on top, is a blow up of this area only, showing the developed lands that are going to be requested for approval. There's 472 dwelling units. That's broken down with 53 buildings that'll house 6 units each in those buildings, and 14 buildings that'll house 11 units of multifamily in those buildings. It is served by central water and sewer. The area, again, is 186.56 acres total. The developed area is 34 acres. The open space is 152 acres. The wooded area that includes all the lands along here is 85 acres. There's 40 acres of 404 lands. There's close to 18 acres of tidal wetlands, and there's 130 acres of uplands. This project will have amenities. They'll be passive and active. There will be interconnectivity. There's preservation of cultural and environmental resources in this plan for archaeology, woodlands, and wetlands. There's efficient use of infrastructure. It will become a walkable, bikeable, and livable community. On tab 1 of your booklet, page 6, there is a photo essay describing the existing conditions. About at this point on photo 1, we do have the Cadbury housing development across the street. It's about at the entrance portion of where the Townsend and Governor's Entry Road will enter the site. Photo 2 just merely has another picture of Cadbury just up the road a little bit. Photo 3 shows the agricultural well pumping facilities and the woodland edge along the Pot Hooks Creek in the rear. Photo 4 indicates that the land predominantly is open farmland. And photo 5 merely makes reference to the interconnection of the Junction Breakwater Trail, which is up the edge of Gills Neck Road, up in this area, up in here. Part of the planning process, again, I do want to emphasize, in this particular instance, the archaeological studies that took place on top of the wetland delineations and the woodland line and the topography lines and the survey of the property and the roadways. That archaeological study impacts this site more than the others. It was undertaken by Height Consultant, and it was prepared back in June of 2005, that study. So it was just at the point where prior to us beginning the planning operations. The DLDOT again was contacted in July of 2004. TIS was undertaken in the summer of 2005. Agreements on the upgrades to Gills Neck Road, which was shown in our previous application, remain with this application as well. We are still waiting, just for the record, for that final letter to be issued from DLDOT on the TIS. We did review utility providers, and we do provide willing and able letters. This particular project will have a contribution to the EMS that is run by the Lewis Fire Department. The county sewer and extension upgrades are the same. That Steve McCabe will answer any questions specifically to this particular project. Opportunities, plus process. In this particular project, we also went to plus and received their comments. Their comments start on tab 2. And you have Connie Holland's letter at that point. There are no negative comments listed on that. They were encouraged with our buffer width, which average 144 feet. I do want to point out that the buffer widths that we are stating here tonight for the record are from the 404 lands, not from the tidal wetlands, which means the tidal wetlands are even further away than what we're proposing, what we're stating here in the 404s, because the titles sit inside of the 404s. They did have concern over the impervious surface. The Department of Historical and Cultural Affairs commended the developer on the generous conservation of lands. DLDOT stated in their plus comments that they were familiar with this plan and that they had prior opportunity to review it, and it was generally supportive of the plan. They also had no negative comments. DNRC spoke in favor of it. Department of Ag claimed they had no objections to the proposed development. In your booklet on tab 3 is the first page of the application that's before you. After you pass the first divide is the governor's development report required by the environmentally sensitive development overlay zone. And in this particular instance, we've answered those questions with the stormwater quality. We will be providing for stormwater quality using BMPs and existing systems. It will be a little more diverse in its stormwater capabilities. There will be bioswales and infiltration capabilities on this site. We are getting water by tide water. There is a 12-inch transmission line installed. Wastewater will be operated and maintained by Sussex County. The traffic improvements we discussed. Rare and endangered species, there are no state records for federally listed plants, animals, or natural communities at the site. They recommended the forest stay intact. This proposal has maintained 96% of the existing forest is to be preserved. This plan also uniquely provides for the conservation of lands. There is 63.72 acres that would remain in that conservation area. Out of that 63.72 acres, 36 acres is 404 lands, 18 acres is tidal wetlands, and 10 acres is uplands. So it's not all wetlands that's in that conservation area. There is a 10 acres of dispersed wetlands throughout, uplands throughout that. In the woodland section of the 85 and a half acres of woodlands, 61 will be in the conservation area. The remaining woodlands, for the most part, will remain in open space and not quite designated conservation lands, but will be in the open space of the governors. We briefly touched on the average buffer being 144 feet. No development will occur in any tidal or non-tidal wetland on this application. Of the open space, of the 52 acres, there will be multi-use paths. There'll be natural areas. There'll be active areas. There'll be a pool, tennis court, and bathhouse facilities. The public and private infrastructure, the roads and travelways will be up to county specifications, and they will remain private. The electric company would be Delaware Electric Co-op. Telephone would be Verizon. Historical and cultural resources, identify and survey to protect them within the open space, and we have done that with this plan. We believe we're presenting a superior living environment. The standard 20,000 square foot lots with only 10% open space requirement. This is a much better plan than that. It's an efficient use of infrastructure. We've expanded the buffers. We've extended the bikeway connection. We're conserving the riparian woodlands, the floodplains, the wildlife habitat, the cultural sites, and we're protecting a corridor for wildlife movement and bioreserves. Open space for active and passive recreation and off-site sewer to benefit the estuarian systems nearby are all part of the superior living environment that this plan offers. Subdivision considerations. There's 17 items. A lot of those items would be redundant to go through them, but there is two items that are worthy of talking about, and that's screening along the roadside, which is a condition of Ordinance 1920, which requires an extended roadside screen to be incorporated into the plan of 75 feet. So with the addition of the improvements with Kings Highway and the multi-use path, there will be an extended landscape plan at that edge of the road along Gills Neck Road. If we move to the third divide in tab 3, it's compliance with zoning. This particular project, as Dennis Schrader pointed out, is most likely the first application in front of this commission for the bonus density trade. I want to point out that though it's known as the bonus density ordinance, it also provides for acquisition and preservation of open space off-site and or active or passive recreational areas. And it's only applied to sites that are appropriate for such an amendment to be applied to. We believe that this site is appropriate to be considered. It is in a growth area. It is an environmentally sensitive development area. It does have sewer. It does have water. It has the infrastructure to support the additional density in this area and the capability of not harming the environment. Additionally, with that compliance with zoning or the density bonus ordinance 1920 is we needed to provide additional open space even with internally within the site. We've done that. The ordinance calls for 40% open space. We have 81% open space. The question of, well, what about the conservation lands? Yes, I'm including the conservation lands when I say that, that we have 81% open space. If I were to take the conservation lands away, I would reduce the total acreage in front of you tonight to define my density. So with the conservation lands, I have 186 acres. If I take the conservation lands away, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, I believe I have about 120 acres. If I take the remaining 88 acres that still remains in open space on this governor's application, I'm around a 76%, 72% open space, well above the 40% required, regardless which way you want to calculate open space and meeting the requirements of 1920. This particular project will generate just shy of $2 million for additional open space. On top of the open space that we are already accounting for internally, it will place just shy of $20,000 is $2 million purchasing the additional density that we're requesting with this application. This is a chart to just go through that density trade. The governor's density right now, we're looking at 472 units. The allowable density by ordinance 1920 is the gross square footage divided by two dwelling units per acre. So the allowable density is 373 units would have been allowed on this site. The allowable density with the density trade option is four dwelling units to the acre. If you take the full square footage divided by one-fourth of what's required per acre, you would be allowed 746 units. You'd be allowed to be asked for 746 units with the density trade option. We've done here a density trade calculation. We're proposing 472, less our allowable in AR1 of 373. We have a unit increase of 99. The cost of the trade is 99 dwelling units times $20,000 a unit, which is just shy of $2 million mark. I don't mind taking any questions on that at this point, or we could save it, but I think it's because it's a new concept, and calculation has been run by members of the Sussex County Planning and Zoning Department. I believe that we have accurately accounted for it in the provisions that are addressed in the Ordinance 1920. The tab 4 runs through the various maps that were used putting this land use together, which is the future land use map, Delaware state spending policy, the zoning map, and the compatibility on the zoning map, which is the third map in on tab 4. I want to point out that this density of 4 units to the acre is not at a place in this particular area. Just to the north of us is the Cadbury and Breakwater developments. Just to the south of us is the Bay Crossings development. Each of those three developments are rated as MR zoned right now. The calculation, they've not gone to the full 4 units to the acre, but Cadbury's at 3.71, Bay Crossing's at 2.5, and Breakwater's at 3. Our density that we're requesting is 2.53, with the 99 additional units being added, would put our density calculation at 2.53. On top of those maps, we have the aerial photo showing the site laying over the woodlands and the farm fields. You then have a site plan. You have a site data map. You have a survey. You have a tax parcel subdivision, which would be then recorded with the approval of this plan. It goes on past that divide. It shows a tax map. It shows floodplain maps. There are 100-year floodplains and 500-year floodplains in this. There's no structures or improvements on any of those. Even the 500-year floodplain is free of any structures whatsoever. The water recharge map, the USGS quad map, the soils map, and the state resource area maps are all included in that tab 4. Near the end of that tab is a note or a memo to the record that we did meet with Cape Henlopen School District. We spoke about school bus stops and have responded to them and will respond if they have any additional information as to where they would like to see bus stops located. The last page of tab 4 addresses a letter and a memo to the Lewis Fire Department, which commits with the approval of this development, a $100 per unit sale, which will equal $47,200. There'll also be an annual assessment through the HOA on every unit of $10, so they would be guaranteed a minimum of $4,700 and $4,720 a year from this development once it is built out. Tab 5 addresses some stormwater. We have met with Jessica Watson in that regard. There, we did make some assumptions. There are bioswales. We are utilizing the woodland buffer as a bioreserve, which will significantly reduce some of the uncaptured waters that might be coming off of the back of the sites, which is not unlike what's happening today, where all water is moving through the croplands and moving through those woodlands. We'll actually be improving that situation by grading, capturing, infiltration, and so forth. And 90% of storm events are less than the 2-inch storm. So 90% of the storm events on this site typically will infiltrate. That's the concept. We move on to circulation. We do include the maps and improvements along Gills Neck Road that we've agreed to at DelDOT, and that are still under the engineering development. And they do include the multi-use path, the bikeway striping, D-cell lanes, left-turning lanes, acceleration lanes. We also have in the booklet a regional pedestrian connection. Mike Johnson had asked me before about these connections. This is a map that does show what's existing, what's proposed, and what's proposed in the future, if you would read the color marks. And it does show it as being external as well as internal to all those developments. In the actual project development, we are proposing with this development sidewalks to the tune of 23,600 linear feet. That's greater than 4.5 miles. We're proposing a multi-use path of 5,550 feet, just a little over 1 mile. So it is a walk, just as we stated, it is going to be a walkable. It is going to be a bikeable. On top of that, there's opportunity for nature trail walks through these lands. These lands are all uplands up here. There is, in little gut areas, some 404 lands. For the most part, 8-9 months out of the year, you would not know that they were wet areas, and you could walk through them as well. And we count that along with our recreation area as for birding, strolling. It's a passive way to utilize the land, and we're not anticipating any man-made improvements in those areas. There's a map in the booklet identifying the open space. It's keyed in green. It's also cross-hatched the conservation lands. In the green, you'll see that there is 88.6 acres remaining in the governor's project after the conservation lands are given. And the conservation lands, if they become esticular, there's nothing to say that they wouldn't stay with the governor's if this commission and county council decides that that's what it needs to be. We think they're better suited in the hands of a conservation group, which has not been selected as of yet, but that breaks down the open space and breaks out those two parcels of land. There's also an amenities site plan blow up in the booklet showing pool, tennis court, showing a pool house, a bath house, associated parking, realizing not everybody's going to ride their bikes. We've left ample parking to accommodate community members, and that's all on the plan there. The street cross sections, are outlined after the second divide in tab 6. And we will have a boulevard entrance. We do show cross sections showing the plantings and the boulevard entrance and the widths that we're anticipating. It's going to be closed section. There will be curbing. There will be sidewalks. Entry boulevards will also be included into each of the areas here. Your typical travel way between homes will consist of a 25-foot travel way. It'll have curbing, sidewalks on both sides, and parking. The last portion of that is a cross-section showing what we had shown about Gills Neck Road with the landscape buffer that'll be included on Gills Neck Road. There's also descriptions in the book showing a plan view of mini parks that will be placed in areas. These little areas here for throwing a frisbee and whatnot, along with walking and tie-in trails that lead you to and from the amenity areas and walk through the entire community. There's a couple of places in here where they could actually become aesthetic or functional to just simply sit with a bench and read a book. There's typical street cross sections in there showing how they all work. There's also an architectural concept drawing showing the townhouses that would be considered with the approval of this application. We did run all the street names through the assessment division. They've all been approved and are listed in the booklet as to what those names would be. We have willing in tab 7 are basically willing and able letters from Tidewater, Delaware Electric, Verizon, notes on Sussex County wastewater. There's also a concept plan on the last page of tab 7 showing how the hookups and so forth and pump station and all will work in that subdivision. The tab 8 has a code of regulations for the governor's condominium, and at the very end of the booklet is our open space management plan. There are several areas of concern. It's the conservation area, and that should be managed different than other areas for all that perimeter riparian forest. We will have meadow areas. We will have manicured grass areas. We will have stormwater and bioswales and infiltration areas that will all need to be managed slightly different than the rest of the open space areas. And then we'll have the active recreational areas and passive recreational areas. So it's an outline on defining that we recognize there are several different types of open space that are going to be placed on this site. Obviously, it's greater than 10 acres. It will need a nutrient management plan to accompany that. And that's the end of my presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Ford. Mr. McCabe, for a moment, please. Mr. McCabe, you earlier this evening in the other application presented your opinions and facts relating to stormwater management, wastewater for the project, and the effects of project on Lewis infrastructure. Are there any facts or opinions that would be different as they apply to this particular site?
No, sir, other than the number of units under the bonus density is still under the sewer capacity allotted by the county and as approved by the sanitary sewer concept plan that's on file with the engineering department. The project is approved for 487 EDUs under the county's approved sewer concept plan, and even with the bonus density, it's still at 472, so it's 13 under.
Water by Tidewater?
Water is by Tidewater Utilities.
Sewer by Sussex
County? Sewer by Sussex County.
And you haven't seen our traffic impact study yet, have you?
I have not.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any further questions, Mr. McKay? Board's head, one brief question. Are there any facts or opinions that you gave in the prior presentation on the earlier change of zone that would be different in this application by reason of any site differences?
Well, this site has more recharge area, more open space. It does also have a center pivot, so that means that the same concept of water loss from recharge would be identical. There's about 70 acres that are irrigated, and that equates to about a 900-foot radius of influence around a well that supplies that irrigation system.
Anything else that you'd like to add?
Not at the moment.
Thank you. And we will waive on Mr. Townsend's testimony, and if you'll let me conclude, we would point out that we did submit to Mr. Robertson earlier a copy of a code of regulations which will provide for the self-governance and the maintenance of the various areas within the project that would require perpetual maintenance, including stormwater management, roads, streets, and the common amenities. This particular plan, as defined and described by Mr. Ford, is consistent with the area in which it exists. It does result in a bonus density being awarded to my client as a result of the application of ordinance number 1920. However, as he has described for you, and using the calculations that are set out, we are considerably less than 4 units to an acre, which would be your standard MR medium density residential district, at 2.53 acres. And as he also calculated, we have a considerable open space that's being used in this project, or will be available at the end of this project if it is granted to you. I have submitted to Mr. Robertson also a proposed set of findings of fact and conditions that he may use as a guide or for whatever other purposes he may have as this matter goes forward. And in those, I have referred to the fact that this property is within the comprehensive plan in an environmentally sensitive development district overlay zone, that it is in this level 3 state strategies area. I have referred to the density calculations that I have just spoken to you about, and also to the requirements of ordinance number 1920 as it includes a requirement for open space greater than 40% and larger than normal 70-foot wide vegetated buffer strips. Thank you, gentlemen. If you have any further questions, we're all available as need be.
All right, sir. Thank you. We'll see if anyone has any questions for you, and we'll start with Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Ford, I have to say this is probably the most creative carving up of a parcel of land I've seen in my 3 years here. But and given that, I do have a question, and I'll refer you to your Section 4, the map, the tax map immediately following your blue divider. It's cited at the top as a tax map.
Yes.
And that shows me the snaking of the land as it goes around the proposed Senators and Hawkeye, and looks like it ventures into the area of another development. It's late. I'm tired. I can't remember the name of that development.
It's only Hawkeye.
Hawkeye, thank you.
Because there is then there's wetlands and other issues here for Wolf Run that are up in this area.
But so given that, if I might finish my thought, given the way that snakes around, I noticed on that particular map I'm referencing two parcels that are outlined in blue. One that's shaped like a boot or Italy, and the other one that looks like the state of Ohio. I'll show you on mine.
No, I know what you're talking about.
Okay. Italy and Ohio. And I couldn't figure out what those parcels are for, or why they're there, or did you just run out of red ink?
I don't think it's correctly depicted. I don't know what those two blue parcels are.
So they may or may not be part of this.
I don't
snaking piece.
I don't believe that they are all part of this. The land, the survey shows what we have here in more detail than this indication that was overlaid here. So I would go by the survey only, and that's where all the calculations were taken from.
So then perhaps it would be better shown on this map if those blue lines were red.
You know, the tax map might show those blue lines being there, but the survey doesn't. Then the tax map is not always correct. We got to go by the survey. So that might have been outlined in those little areas. Had it that way, but our surveyor tells us that line cuts through here and doesn't include that one island here and the other islands up in here.
So your survey does not include those?
No.
Okay. And I'm presuming, because I don't want to assume, but I'm presuming that the odd-shaped lands is done primarily for the purpose of increasing density for this parcel?
We didn't even know that this ordinance would be in existence when this Hawkeye subdivision was approved, built, and is being sold. So what the intent was to take what was believed to be sensitive lands prior to even the SRA maps identifying them as such. This was all developer-driven, that they didn't want a carte blanche opening to those parcels. They wanted to control those parcels in a conservation manner. And thus, they were remaining lands in this parcel. So when we moved forward with Senators, we had these lands to deal with. The developers decided, well, we want to maintain the same position with those lands that are along that Pothooks Creek as we did in Hawkeye. And at some point, we needed to address all these remaining lands, and we did address it in the governor's. And yes, it behooves us for the density calculation to have done so as well. But it was impossible to conceive of that at the time that these were originally put forth.
And approximately how many acres of land are being proposed to be set aside in conservation?
63 acres.
63.
And some odd change.
Okay. So using my off the top of my head calculations, if you pull out those 63 acres plus or minus, doesn't that leave your resorting density of about 4 per acre?
It's under 4 per acre if you...
Like a tad under 4.
It's 3.8, something in that manner.
And if this parcel was developed as a standard subdivision as allowed under the R1 zoning ordinance, approximately how many units of single-family houses would you be able to provide?
Say it again.
373.
373? Thank you. That's 186 times 2. Thank you. 186 and a half.
He was asking how many lots were allowed under a standard AR.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
You reported on that about 25 minutes ago.
Well, you know, I'm not as sharp as you are. You're younger.
You're sharper than I am. I just have to remember that.
Part of the approach to this kind of planning was to subvert, I think, the giving away of density by coming in here and asking for an MR zoning change, and by virtue of Cadbury and Breakwater and Bay Crossings, which meet us on each side, that we had a pretty good chance of getting MR zoning. This way, there was a option to pay for that zoning upgrade, and then allowing that upgrade money to even further buy open space in the watershed. That money, I need to point out, and thank you for the opportunity, is that ordinance calls for that money to be spent in that watershed. It can't be taken to Laurel, can't be taken to Greenwood. It needs to be spent in that watershed.
Yeah. Thank you. I guess one of the areas of confusion for me in looking at the plus comments, and I'll refer you to page 20 of 22, dealing with the Department of Education. On the one hand, they start out saying that the Department of Education indicates that Cape and Lupin has schools are not at or beyond 100% capacity. But then in that same area, they then drop down and say that the district does not have adequate student capacity to accommodate the additional students that might be generated by this project. Approximately how many students are that, and they reference it, 236. Has there been any discussion with the school district as to point number 6 in terms of the developer strongly encouraged to address the issue of school overcrowding with the by the developer?
Well, I have talked with John Marinucci in regards to how they do their general estimate. Is this basically is across the board 1.5 kid per housing unit is how they come up with that number. So you got 472, I'm assuming 236 is one half of that. It is. We hired Andy Brandenberger, superintendent at Cape Henlopen, or retired superintendent, to put forth a report for us. And he is coming out with a report that is dramatically different than the 236. And even John Marinucci says, well, every district is different, but we don't have the means to come down to every district and do a specialized report for those districts. So we just use across the state, Kent, Newcastle, Sussex, 1.5. Andy's coming out with more like 0.2, and he's coming out that the governors will probably contribute about 100 students, so it's dramatically different than 236. Now that 100 students would be put across 13 grades from K to 12, and it translates out to be about 11 and a half students per grade. That would be, actually I'm including senators with that as well, with that number. When I say 11 and a half, it's actually less just for governors. It'd only be about 8.5 students for governors per grade. So given this report and talking with the Board of Education, the developments normally take, you know, 6 to 8 years to develop out. It's a slow progress. Tax monies are increased. The issue of school overcrowding, I think, could probably be better addressed at this point, but I'm not prepared to give you any more information than I stated just now.
Is that report a part of the record?
The Brandenburg report? I just received it yesterday.
Okay. Thank you.
So it's not part of the record, but I can make it part of the record.
And no further questions at this time, Mr. Chairman.
All right, sir. Well, thank you. Mr. Burton.
Couple questions. Are you planning any walking trails in the conservation district? You kind of mentioned
we're not planning walking trails. We're actually, I think the trails will sort of just work their way themselves out. We're not saying that we would disallow walking through the woods, but we're not planning any walking trails.
And you mentioned sidewalks. They'd be on throughout all the road network here, or just
as we I believe that's tab 6. The sidewalks basically are on both sides of the roads. The main roads in here would be a multi-use path, which is 10-foot, which connects into Senators and also connects into Townsend Village Center. There's sidewalks in front and around every unit, up and down all sides of the street, including the areas down in this area, that then connect into larger paths as it runs through the spine here. There is a sidewalk. This illustration doesn't show it, but our site plan, I believe, does show it, that there's a sidewalk that runs down here. If it doesn't, there will be. So it runs all the way up to Gills Neck Road. Our plan in front of you here does show that as a sidewalk that will run the length of that, but not both sides of the road on that.
Okay. What type of price range of homes do you figure these things are going to be?
We're looking at $350. That's what we've projected, but that's to be determined. We've run projections for property taxes and things along that based on the $350 value.
And you're showing a bridge here that goes over this stormwater management pond that connects Senators to?
It'll be a FUPA bridge. It'll be a culvert with yes, that's what we are showing.
What kind of bridge?
Fake. FUPA. It'll resemble a bridge.
The faux bridge?
Yes. It's late.
Not a faux pas bridge. That was a faux pas. That's a faux bridge.
And then the connection to the one across Gills Neck Road to go from one to the other, you'd have to, by motor vehicle, you'd have to go on the Gills Neck up and then make a left.
The connection where?
Across the street.
To Cadbury?
To Cadbury, yeah.
We don't have a connection.
No connection point on Gills Neck into Cadbury.
You'd have to get on Gills Neck to go into Cadbury and vice versa.
I have no further questions. All right, sir. Mr. Gordick,
no questions.
Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was reading a remark in here. Apparently, Denrek had some questions regarding the impervious surface calculations. Have you formulated any plans as to how you would respond to their you would try to work with them?
We have quite a elaborate response in that regard on page 6 of 22. Denrek made quite a deal that we significantly underestimated our impervious surface. And we took issue with them on page 6 that we stand behind a highly accurate estimate. And I take off every portion of developed lands and put a square footage to it and an acreage count to it and put a percentage to it. And Connie Holland's letter to us at the beginning of tab 2 states she appreciates the effort that we went in putting forth those calculations.
Thank you. In the restrictive covenants, I'm guessing it being the restrictive covenants. Is there a provision for shared maintenance expenses of the stormwater management area that appears to be partially owned by the senators? There's that one pond up there by the curve.
The answer is yes and no.
This is the shared area that will be both senators and governors. I'd like to point out to Mr. Smith that this pond is going to take on all the stormwater management. Right now, Gills Neck Road has no stormwater management. And the improvements to Gills Neck Road require stormwater management. And the land here is sized to accommodate all of Gills Neck Road.
Each of the two projects, senators and governors, has a self-governance provision that does require the perpetual maintenance of these things. And the answer is yes, they will be provided for in terms of maintenance by either the Owners Association of the senators or the condominium grouping that owns the governors. I think the question that we can't answer for you this evening, is it going to be 50-50, 45-55, or what proportion shares will be attributable to which of the two organizations? But the answer is, yes, they will be provided for as perpetual maintenance.
Okay. That's all the questions I have.
All right, sir. Thank you. Mr. Lang?
You made some reference about the location of the units. Are there any units involved in floodplain areas?
No. Not even the 500-year floodplain.
I thought you had said that. I just didn't quite get that. And just to continue a reference made by one of the commissioners in reference to Cadbury entrance, I'm assuming that you've already discussed that with DelDOT and they didn't want to cross intersection because typically they do.
I'm not going to say DelDOT didn't want it.
Yeah, I've heard that.
We discussed it with DelDOT. We originally had an entrance in there, but when we took a look at that entrance and the Townsend Village Center, and this has been a development of the plan as we moved along. DelDOT didn't want us to have a King's Highway entrance originally.
Right.
They wanted us to, or at least not have a four-way movement on King's Highway, only a right-in, right-out. They moved us to the Gills Neck Road. It moved the Gills Neck Road improvements to the state that they are today. And we moved the governors and the Townsend Center together at that point. So this was part of that comprehensive planning that we took on with DelDOT.
But when you get your final comments from DelDOT, they may want an intersection at that entrance. Possible.
I can't see how. It could be possible, but I don't see how they could verify that being the best thing for Gills Neck.
Well,
typically, you want to reduce
about interconnectivity, so there'll be a possibility of interconnectivity, but for the residents of Cadbury and Breakwater to get to the commercial center, if the commercial center were being approved.
Potential.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Katz?
No questions.
Mr. Abbott?
No questions.
Council?
Yeah, I have a question, and I'm trying to get my hands around the conservation lands. From the drawings that were submitted, are those part of the governor's application? Are they going to be a separate parcel?
They are part of the governor's application, whereas they are all the remaining lands of this tax parcel.
As you've presented it, if this gets approved, are they going to stay with this project, or is it going to be a separate parcel of land? Is ownership going to be the same?
It's a typically right now we're right now we're looking at a dedication of that conservation easement to a group.
Okay. All right. Now that's the question I had, because I think there was a statement that at least led me to believe that it was going to be not only an easement, but deeded to some separate property or party, and that's what I wanted to find out. Okay. The other question I have is more, I think, one for Mr. Schrader. It's sort of more of a procedural one. We've heard as you well know, that we don't have the traffic information from DelDOT that everybody's most interested in. Mr. Schrader, I'm sure you're also aware that there is a 45-day requirement to report to County Council. I think from everything you've said, I think your clients would have an understanding if the record were held open, that wouldn't implicate the 45 days so that we could get the information from DelDOT. I'd like to hear some agreement from you in that respect.
Well, I think that the answer goes like this, Mr. Robertson, that all of us want to see what the response is from DelDOT. I can't tell you, you've heard from Mr. Kennedy earlier indicate that there is a meeting tomorrow and that he has periodically been promised it.
It's been promised since like 2 months from the PLUS report at one point, so that's what we, right.
And so hopefully we will see it tomorrow. I wouldn't bet my week's pay on that, but you know, maybe it'll show up tomorrow. I have a philosophical difference of opinion about how often we get the record left open, and the reason I have a problem with it is that sometimes the record is left open for ill-defined reasons for periods of time that are not well set out. So if the question is, would I agree that the record needs to be left open in order to get the DelDOT response in, and the answer is, yeah, I need it just as much as anybody in this room does. How long? Tomorrow.
We already
said optimistic. Maybe Monday.
That's what we've done. Is we've left it open until it gets here, or till 15 days after it gets here.
So there's a specified date.
Yeah.
I recently ran into something in another jurisdiction, Mr. Chairman, that maybe as a suggestion I would give to Mr. Robertson, if that's what he's thinking about. And that is that if there is, in fact, supposed to be a periodic, there should be a periodic review to find out what that status is, or a report by the applicant as to what the status is. So that if you say it happens whenever it shows up, you're going to be relying upon us to get it to you. But if we're required, let's say 30 days from now, to explain to you in a written form that we have it or we don't have it, at least you'll be current on what information we have. And you may want to incorporate that into some extension.
Oh, okay. All right.
Thank you. That's the last question I had.
We'll rely on you, Mr. Robertson, to give us some language when the time comes. Okay. Anything else?
No. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Well, we thank you, gentlemen, once again. And we'll see if there's anyone here that has an interest in your application. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of conditional use 1772 LT Associates LLC? Is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to conditional use 1772? Yes, sir, we'll start with you. Oh, I'm sorry, we'll start with you. You're the attorney. I'm sorry. Pardon me.
Thank you.
You were ducking down back there. No, I didn't see you.
I was trying to stop laughing at one of Mr. Schrader's comments. At any rate.
He is a funny guy.
Again, we've agreed to represent both managing growth around Lewis Coalition, Mr. Matika's group, Mr. Ennis's group, and Mr. Ennis, Citizens Advocating Liverpool Lewis, and also the Citizens Coalition, Inc. And I don't want to be redundant of what we've said before. The critical thing here is that the lack of this traffic impact study, since there are three related applications, the ability not only of you to make your decision, but of the opposition to have a due process right is severely impacted. And I think one of the problems here, and I don't think it's Mr. Townsend's fault or Mr. Ford's fault or Mr. Schrader's fault, is the county used the expedited procedure to bump these two applications up. And we probably wouldn't be in that dilemma if you didn't do it. And there's under Ordinance 1920, it's very difficult to understand why something should get expedited treatment. But if it's a project that you know is going to require a traffic impact study, I have to go back to my comments from the DelDOT criticism of the new plan, is that when you get that report back from DLDOT that you need a TIS, you really need to probably stop the process until that gets done before it comes back to you. I mean, it's a procedural problem. It affects you, affects my clients trying to oppose this, affects Mr. Schrader trying to present the application. That's just the procedural overview problem for my respective clients. And that, you know, that information should get in here, and then my clients could probably make a more informed decision, particularly when there's three different groups that they have a uniform agenda on the commercial center, but their agendas are not necessarily uniform on a residential application. With that said, there is one thing that I've observed in this application, which is in concert with the Townsend's Village Center, and that's that the applicant hasn't really looked at the land use plan, which has a force of law, and it should be a guide for your decisions. Had the applicant looked at the land use plan properly, and in our estimation, how this type of kind of a regional development occurs, that had they looked at it, they probably would have not suggested a major regional center which interferes with traffic, but rather a small village center that would have been centrally located in their expanding.
But we just had that hearing and it was closed.
I understand it, but I
what you have to say about this?
But they're tied, Mr. Wheatley, is that if they had followed the land use plan, the application would have been different, and that's all we have to say. With that, I'll ask Mr. Matico to come up.
Good evening. I'm going to try and be brief. We've all had a long night. John Matico, 304 Pilottown Road in Lewis. First of all, this is just a delightful and charming layout. It would be, the sad thing is, without the traffic study, we don't know that this can be built and realized, because this really does deserve to be built somewhere. It would be a beautiful place to live, but we don't know the impact. I would commend to you respectfully for special study. This is the first time you have this enhanced type of density. It's absolutely essential that these not come before you without the DLDOT study being in place, because by definition, this is where that's where high volumes of traffic by definition are going to be showing up. So really the whole game here is can it work? Does the road system carry? You need the DLDOT study. That's the only big thing here. The next item I'm going to mention is small. It can easily be fixed. What I'm going to mention is the requirement. I think it's been stipulated that this is an environmentally sensitive area, so that's not contested. And I believe it would be stipulated that we can all read the same language in the comprehensive plan. And if I may, just very briefly here, guidelines for infrastructure in environmentally sensitive developing areas. Environmentally sensitive areas can be defined as developing district with special environmental design and protection requirement. And as you look into that, page 12 and 13, the requirement is to provide neighborhood shopping, and then at a later page, it defines that as not to exceed in aggregate or a single building 75,000 square feet. There's a very beautiful place where this could be located, and if I may,
you could maintain that pathway and have, this would hold about, marketing will tell you this, it would be about four stores of 1,000 to 1,200 square feet. That's standard calculations. And you could have one on either side of a little tiny plaza, you know, 30 feet wide benches. That's where the bus stops, and that's where the mail is, and the UPS, and all of that stuff. So this is what smart growth is, or new urbanism. Any, the whole idea is the way, the type of community I grew up in, when you needed milk, those days I didn't go out for an extra bottle of red wine, or you need Pampers or something. You don't have to get in a car for even basic needs. That's what your code is telling you. It's right down there. Here it is. So it fights sprawl, and that's good, right? So that relieves, it's good for the developer, because then you don't have cars out on the road. So if you would put that in there, it's easy. It's not going to cost anything. You got the land. So this is not a killer or anything. But what goes to the point here, every one of these three developments misses that. I don't know why. It's in the code. Somehow it's not, it's just not getting there. No, the code says village level. It doesn't say shall, which is, you know, it should. Okay? But it redundantly, over and over, it says this is what needs to happen. Village level clusters, so people will walk to it, not take the car, or if it's a lousy night, excuse the language, like this, it's raining, but you don't, it's internal. It's a short car drive. You don't have to get out on the road and contribute to sprawl. It stays internal. You can walk if it's a nice day like it has been, or you can take a short car drive. That whole concept is missing. It's just, I don't quite understand it. It's missing here, but it's not missing in the comprehensive plan, which is the requirement that it should. Can I just point out something here? I'm not going to read a whole lot at all from this, but if I could just enter into the record. This is not far out, you know, environmentalism or something like that. Let me put into the record here a piece from this organization. It's not Tree Huggers, the National Association of Realtors, right? This...
They're all the same, okay.
And that will tell you from their research that that is where the market is, that people want that. They will pay a little bit more for it. By the way, that is why people like Historic Lewis, because they can walk down to the restaurant, walk down and buy a bottle of red wine, walk down and buy something. You don't have to get in this, and then they meet their neighbors, and it creates community and all this type of stuff. So I just refer that general concept that the market has changed, the world has changed. This is not oddball stuff that, preaching on Sunday. This is where the real estate market is going, and your comp plan has already taken you there. And for some reason, these projects that are being presented to you don't comply with either where the market is, but that's their choice. It's a private property, right? But what is not their choice is to ignore your comprehensive code requirement. So thank you very much.
For my respective clients, I'd like to have Mr. Lenhart's report incorporated into this. And I'd like to have Mr. Ennis come up real briefly as one of my clients, and then after that, yeah.
Okay. The hour is late. I will be brief. I just would like, Dave Ennis from 50 Harborview Road, I'd just like to identify for the fact that the town of Lewis has had a supplemental study going on that I'm sure you're aware of that deals with a project called Schofield, which is both partly in the city and partly in the county. But it's my understanding the town has engaged a firm called URS to advise them on the growth situation that be related to that, and particularly related to transportation. I think Mr. Tyler earlier referred to having some opportunity, and I think the chair a few moments ago made some general statement about from the time that the DLDOT report came in to the time that this committee might have a closing. It would be very helpful if the town is given the window of opportunity to engage their consultant on the transportation consequences of the Gills Neck Road, because all of that is going to be impacted dramatically. And I think in closing, I would just like to say that I've not seen before, but in the copy of the governor's report that I have, they do refer to this pond, and they talk about the stormwater management design will incorporate site off-site improvements along Gills Neck as well as portion of the Senator's development. They've defined in their governor's report that they are going to engage in sharing the stormwater. I felt when I read that that it would entitle you to certainly look at the total picture of all of those developments that are going on in that area, rather than just having to look at Senators separate and apart from governors, because they've actually linked it. And I would encourage you to give some thought to those drainage and storm surge numbers, because I do think we're going to have more heavy rains as we have had in recent years. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And finally, Mr. Tyler.
For the record, my name is Michael Tyler. I'm president of Citizens Coalition. I've just got a few concerns here. One is that density isn't really the problem here. The problem is when you add up the numbers. I think Michael referred to 2,000 or just under 2,000. Right. You know, with 607 at Schofield and 714 here, you know, how is this going to impact the whole ability to move around and to move traffic and traffic flow? That just troubles me as far as, you know, the quality of life and just what it's going to do to noise and air pollution and so forth. The other thing I've concerned with is the stormwater management ponds. You know, I view them as attractive nuisances. I also view them as 20th century technology. I think 21st century best management practices would really push you towards open space bioswales, bioretention ponds that or basins that don't attract resident geese. They don't attract kids who may wander into a stormwater pond. They don't create problems with maintenance and debris and clutter and so forth. And I would really ask the developer to consider, you know, that the stormwater management pond should be the last resort, because this land is, I think, drainable. They could create bioswales. Yeah, they require maintenance too, because they use diatomaceous earth and different things to filter, but they can be done creatively in a way that creates more open space. I really think the open space that they're creating is good stuff, but stormwater management ponds, I don't think, are part of that, or shouldn't be part of that. And also, your numbers, you got to back out roads and other things, so I don't know if they could put that many houses in. If they, out of 186 acres, they'd have to back out some things like roads and sidewalks and so forth. But anyway, I really think that they ought to take a second look, or you ought to see if there's a possibility that stormwater management ponds could be minimized. Okay.
I'm going to ask Mr. Ford to respond to the concern about drainage. Has come up a couple times, and I apparently some folks are perceiving that that's going to be a real issue or problem or potential problem. And then on top of that, Mr. Tyler's comments about the ponds. I just, Mr. Ford, I'm not saying that there's a right or a wrong answer, but I know that you know about these things, and I'd be interested to hear what you had to say about it.
Well, I don't have it with me. I have a flood map of the entire Lewis area. It indicates Category 1 through Category 4 storms and where the drainage problems occur. I was saying in my office that, in reality, if it weren't for the water connection, the town of Lewis should have developed right here. This entire area on those maps stays white. The Category 1, you see movement of flooding coming up these creeks here. Category 2, you see movements of the Canary Creek starting to inundate the new road section. Category 3, and there is a section down here on Gills Neck Road. Category 3 and 4 basically take the entire Lewis community and flood it, with exception to the hospital and the areas that are along this road right in here, which stay white as well. This area in here and throughout stays white throughout all those different categories. I don't have that map with me, but it's we did look at the flood issues. And this is probably the best soils in the entire area with the highest elevations.
Okay. And how about the comment about the ponds?
The ponds, what you're looking at is a graphic. It is an illustrative. This is a little more of an enhanced engineering. We typically don't get into that level of presentation because it is subject to soil conservation. But all the green hatchet area is infiltration. We do have a couple of ponds. It's not as big and large as you see on the graphic, though in a flood situation, it will look like the graphic looked that we have in the site plan. Typically, as I was saying, that 90% of the storms will infiltrate in these areas. It's only 10% of the storms that are over the 2-inch storm mark that do have to have outfall as they come. But basically, most of the rainfall on this land is going to end up in these depression areas that are that do have ponds, and that's not even fully engineered out yet. So it's an area that we're talking a little premature upon, but this is the approach that we're looking at. This is more detailed approach that we take to storm soil conservation, have a discussion with Jessica and their group. The yellow lines indicate sub-drainage areas that are occurring, and one of the reasons is the natural flow of the land from Governors, and it doesn't show Senator's line, does flow to this area, and we're not trying to fight that natural contour, we're trying to work with that natural contour. Thus, you have the selection of where these ponds are. All these areas that you see where the buildings are, these are sort of gut areas. The grades get lower in here. The grades get lower in here. Part of that amorphous look you see in the site plan is a direct response to the environmental conditions and inherent topography of the site without moving soil from one direction to the other. That's difficult to explain at a site planning hearing, but it goes through a series of engineering reviews through the state organizations.
So they may be faux ponds.
No.
Now, something I think about that Mr. Ennis reminded us of sometime this evening, that the 12 inches of rain that Seaford received in a 24-hour period a couple years ago, an engineer once told me that everything is designed to fail, it's just a question of when. And Mr. Burton knows all about that because he ended up with a lot of amphibious vehicles to sell.
Which I never sold.
Which you never sold to one of them, yeah. But do you care to posit an opinion on what might happen if you got 12 inches of rain in 24 hours?
The only thing I can say is these ponds, the outfall is the biggest issue.
Yeah.
You take all this collection of water and you get that event, the outfall is designed for a 100-year storm. So it can handle a fairly large volume of water.
Right.
Now, you get storms bigger than 100 years, you're going to have problems probably everywhere throughout the state. But the outfall and current regulations require a 100-year storm outfall event, which means they will be riprap, they will be able to withstand an extreme amount of water over in the event that we get bigger storms than 2-inch rainfalls.
Hmm. Okay, thank you. That's good. Anyone else want to speak in opposition? Yes, ma'am. Step right up. And then you're next in the green.
My name is Barbara Vaughn. I'm a member of Lewis City Council, and I don't want to speak in opposition or in favor of, but I do want to thank all of you for your patience and just to comment on the process, the courtesy that you've all shown the people from Lewis, and I know you know how much they care about their town, and so it's just a thank you.
Well, thank you. We appreciate that. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and the Commission. I'm not strongly opposed to this. As
I know you got to tell us, and we already knew.
Ronald
it.
Smith,
there
and
you go.
40-year resident on Gills Neck Road.
Got it.
Just some comments. Like I said, I'm not strongly opposed to this like I am the shopping center. That's, you know, a no-brainer. Mr. Townsend has done an admirable job with the two developments or three that he's put in already. It's just I don't know why we have to keep increasing density. There comes a point where we oversaturate the area, and I think we're, you know, approaching that, especially with these big developments. An observation on Cadbury, it's ugly. It's ugly driving by, it's ugly in the air, and
I don't have an ugly ordinance. That's
well, I know, and beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah, aesthetic ordinances are tough.
But it just, to me, the Cadbury's out of character. I mean, it was a necessity or a necessary part of the community, but it did not have to look the way it turned out. The contributions for infrastructure that I guess Mr. Schrader, Mr. Ford mentioned, in other words, there was going to donate $100 for each dwelling and then at $10 a year per dwelling, that's way too low for this was for fire
How much
protection.
Do you pay at your house?
I've donated over $100 or more for at least the last 2 to 3 decades.
Okay.
So I think this, you know, $10 a dwelling per year is very insufficient. And if this development keeps occurring, we're going to have to go from a volunteer fire company to a paid fire company.
I think you're going to see that.
And it's going to cost a lot more than $10 a dwelling.
Better believe it will.
The nitrogen, I don't know if the comments the person made about there'll be less nitrogen, et cetera, if the development occurs as opposed to agriculture. I really don't think that's true, because in the developments that are already there, most of these people have manicured lawns that are maintained professionally, and they put down a lot of nitrogen and so weed killer and so forth, and they probably use less in agriculture. I guess that's all, but one, I'll make an offer for up to 3 people on this commission. I'll give you an aerial view of the area if you're interested.
We really appreciate that, but you know what? We can't 3 of us go at one time because we can't have a quorum. So you could only take 2.
Well, I'm not saying, oh, okay.
We can only go 2 at a time. But we appreciate that.
We could have an agenda for a meeting.
We could put it on the agenda. That's it. Yeah, we could put it on the agenda and advertise it. Thank you for your comments, sir. Anyone else like to speak in opposition? Yes, ma'am.
Charito Calvachima, Teco, 304 Pilotown, Lewis. I do have a problem with the process because why do you expedite this? For me, it doesn't have common sense because it's like deciding about what room you are going to be if you get operated, what is the bed you are going to use, all the little details when you have not been diagnosed. It's like jumping too much ahead when there is vital, fundamental decisions to be made, like in this case, no traffic analysis yet. So how can spend so much of your precious time, because I value that. But the other thing also is that we really need to start thinking out of the box of these adversarial processes. Randall Aron, when he came here to Lewis and gave this talk, he said, people work together, the whole community, identified special places that they care about and they want to preserve. Together, they decided. And I am sure the developers end up doing even a more wonderful development where everybody is happy. Let's start thinking about stopping this adversarial process. We don't need to be here like enemies, but like a community together, making better decisions. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Anyone else? Anyone on the commission have any questions? There being none, we'll close the public hearing. We'll invite you to remain with us for the rest of the evening to see if we make a decision on this application, or you may simply wish to call the office in the morning.